Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Write Club. The first rule of Write Club is you don't talk about Write Club, but we'll make an exception in your case.
Welcome back. This is Write Club, the podcast for writers and readers everywhere. I'm Steph and I'm here with Teresa, Heather and Pat.
Hello.
This week on Write Club, we're looking at flash fiction. And later in the programme, we'll be talking to novelist, playwright and prize-winning short fiction writer Gail Aldwin. But before that, Pat's going to share some work in progress with us. And after she's read it to us, we'll be offering her critique and ideas to improve the piece, just the way we do in our Write Club meetings. Since our interview with Matt Owen, the TV writer, a few weeks back, lots of people have been trying their hand at writing for TV. And although Nicola can't be with us today, she has recorded a top techie tip for you aspiring screenwriters. At the end of the show, Teresa and Matt Owen are going to share what's on their bedside tables. But before all that, I am going to ask you to
name the novel.
So here's clue number one. This debut novel was published in 1995. The protagonist is a 35-year-old owner of a failing record shop, and the novel opens with him listing the five major breakups of his life, and the girl that has just left him doesn't make the top five. Teresa's scribbling.
Total blank.
Heather's shaking her head. Mm. Okay, clue number two. The 2000 film of the same name as the novel was directed by Stephen Frears, starred John Cusack, Jack Black and Catherine Zeta-Jones, with Bruce Springsteen appearing in a cameo. The author claims the film was incredibly faithful to the book, despite the fact that the film's set in Chicago and the book was set in London.
Mm-hmm.
You're quite confident.
No, I'm not confident. I think I've got the author and I've got the title of a book he wrote.
Okay. Well, I'm now going... Clue number three is I'm going to tell you two other books by the same author.
Oh, and I might be crossing mine off then. Go on.
Right. Other books by the same author include About a Boy and A Long Way Down.
Crossing out About a Boy.
Is that Nick Hornby?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
No idea.
And the novel?
Not a clue.
No, it's High Fidelity.
High Fidelity.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt it was Nick Hornby and I wrote About a Boy because that was the only one I could think of.
Yes.
I haven't read any of them, but they do sound good.
I've read About a Boy. It's very good.
Yeah. Mm. That's the one where they made it into a film starring Hugh...
Is that Hugh Grant?
Yes. Hugh Grant.
Yeah, I've seen that.
All of his books have been very well received. You know, he's been... How to Be Good was longlisted for the Booker Prize. Mm-hmm. And was the UK's favourite work of fiction at the W.H. Smith Book Awards, which is the only major UK book prize awarded by the readers. The public.
Which book was that?
How to Be Good.
How to Be Good, okay. Yeah. To look for that one.
And Jermaine Greer, Zadie Smith and Doris Lessing honoured Nick with the Writers' Award at the Orange Word International Writers' Festival in 2003. So he's quite well thought of among his peer group as well.
Did he do... Something about football.
He did, Fever Pitch. Which is non-fiction, and it won the William Hill Sports Book of the Year. In fact, he started as a playwright.
Mm.
He said they weren't very good, but he'd started writing and everything came out sounding like really bad essays, so he thought, I'll just stick to dialogue because I'm quite good at that. So ended up writing plays, but he says he hadn't done enough reading. And it took him quite a long time and quite a lot of reading to find his voice, which is interesting. So it didn't just happen overnight, that he just went back to reading as much as he could.
Mm.
He then became a journalist and he did a collection of critical essays on American writers. That was non-fiction.
Mm.
Then he did Fever Pitch, but his first fictional books were High Fidelity, About a Boy, How to Be Good, A Long Way Down and Juliet Naked, in that order. Mm-hmm. So he's quite a prolific writer, but not necessarily in fiction.
And as you say, you see the success and you think, it's come easy, but it hasn't necessarily.
No.
People have put the work in and the years in before they have
absolutely
that success.
Mm. And I love the idea that he said, I hadn't read enough.
Yes.
I tried to be a writer and I couldn't because I hadn't read enough.
Yeah.
So, so that's a good excuse to sit down with a book this afternoon.
I should read something of his, I think. Being a 70s person, I get the impression a lot of them are sort of in the 70s or, you know.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say, I think I should read more.
Oh, you can always read more. You can always read more.
Right, well, talking of reading more, Pat, would you like to read to us now?
Okay.
You've got a new piece of work in progress. Tell us about it.
I have. I was talking a few weeks ago about this idea I'd had whereby, a little bit like some of Heather's earlier things, where she has all these people on the same street. This is people with a connection to a little sort of Greek village. And this is another of the characters. And it's called The Walker. This is just the first part of the story. It's not complete.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we love Greece. Real Greco-files, aren't we, dear? Dear smiled in agreement. We've been coming 2 or 3 times a year for 30-something years. Seen a lot of changes, not all for the best. Mass tourism has a lot to answer for. So now we tend to seek out the smaller, out-of-the-way places, don't we, dear? Before Deer had a chance to respond, he continued, "Bit of an exception, this, but there's some good walking in the area, and we thought out of season it might not be too bad. Anyway, must get on." And with that, he strode off, leaving his wife to smile apologetically at the couple on the next table before following him. That poor woman. I tell you, if you ever treat me like that, I might just have to kill you. The husband laughed. I wouldn't dare. I'm not sure one small hotel and a couple of beachside tavernas count as the evils of mass tourism, though. Shaking his head, he went back to his book. Robert, please, just slow down a little. I'm not good on these rough paths. Calderimi, Jane, how many times? They are Calderimi, the narrow tracks used by the goats for hundreds of years. You really need to try a little harder with the language. Otherwise, people will think you're just another tourist. Certainly, when we get our place in Crete next year, you'll need to learn the basics. I just wish you'd chosen somewhere a bit more accessible. I'm worried I will feel very isolated in that little village. We'll be fine. Calives is only about 20 minutes or so in the car. We just need to get you driving again. Look at that for a view. Marvellous. He paused and looked across the bay to the coastline north of the village and smell the thyme. That's the smell of Greece. There was a time when she'd loved his enthusiasm and his apparent knowledge of all things Greek. He'd opened up the world to her. My little townie, he'd called her when they were first together, laughing at her as she tried to pick her way along muddy paths in clean white pumps. They were the nearest thing she had to the walking shoes he'd advised her to wear on their first outing in the nearby Peak District. "Cannot believe you've never been to Edale," he'd exclaimed. Gradually she'd learned to love the walks and him. He would explain the landscape to her, show her the plants nestling in amongst the rocks, and taught her not to be afraid of the animals they encountered. He went with her to buy proper walking boots, bought her a proper waterproof for her birthday. "How much?" a friend Sharon had gasped when she heard how much it had cost. "Bloody hell, Jane, he could have got you a really nice leather jacket for that."
Oh, great. Thank you,
Teresa.
Yeah. It made me smile. It made me laugh out loud, actually. And I have an idea where it might be going, but I'm not going to say anything about that. So I'm looking forward to the continuation. The character of the unconscious bully is very effective. You know, and he keeps telling his wife, she's got to learn Greek, she's got to get back into driving, she's got to do this, that and the other. The opening sentence, "Oh, we love Greece, real Greco-files, aren't we, dear?" just gives you a lot of his character traits right away, very simply and directly. And then the next line you say, "Dear smiled in agreement." And again, the wry, cynical narrative voice. It's great. It's just great. When we get to her husband laughed. I just felt now we've had four nameless characters. I need a little anchor, I think. I need something, like if you'd said Anne's husband or Judy's husband or something. That was my feeling. And I didn't like him shaking his head. Somehow that seemed a bit stagey. You know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That was just a feeling.
I found that a bit of a head hop, to be honest, because we'd been with the bully and Deer, which Deer is wonderful that you haven't named her. I think that's brilliant.
Yes, that's great. Yeah,
because that just says how he feels about her, that she's not even worthy a name. She's just Deer.
Yes, yeah.
But then we go to her, you know, the other woman saying that poor woman. I tell you. But then we go back to Robert and Jane, who we met in the first bit. So there's only really two very short sentences, two or three sentences in the other point of view.
I think you're making a sort of similar point to me that you feel a bit adrift without their names.
A little bit adrift without their names. So,
I like
the fact that they're sort of going, oh my God, what awful people. Mm. We've all met those people, haven't we? I've been here three times a year for the last 30 years and it's now rubbish because all you lot have come.
Yeah.
No, it's really good. Really enjoyed it. Yes, I love it when he says, I can't believe you've never been to a detail. horrible man.
Yeah. I don't think he knows that he's horrible, but I think she's had enough.
Yes.
I definitely think she's had enough. I think she has some cunning plan.
A couple of things when you talk about he went with her to buy proper walking boots and then bought her a proper waterproof. Maybe you could say he went with her to get some decent boots and then he brought her a proper in inverted commas, waterproof.
Yeah.
I didn't think we needed to know that the Peak District is nearby. You know, but really, really little things.
Yeah. No, I think it's shaping up really nicely.
But yeah, it's great. It's great.
Great observation of characters.
We're all rooting for Jane.
Yes, we are. And if any of you have anything to add, Pat would love to hear from you on our Facebook group.
Yeah.
And now, as promised, Nicola has a techie tip for all you would-be screenwriters.
Yes, hello ladies, greetings from Las Vegas. But I just wanted to tell you about some stuff I've found, some useful stuff about screenwriting. Now, I know that Teresa's been into this for a while and Heather and Teresa have both written plays. But I was largely trying to ignore distractions, you know, I was trying to just concentrate on my novel because that's hard enough, let's face it. And then I listened to the Writing for TV episode 72, with an interview with Matt Owen. And I got somehow a bit fired up, despite my best intentions. So I was watching, it was just sort of knocking around in the back of my head. And then I watched I've been watching some amazing television recently on Netflix. And the first one that I'd like to mention is Preacher, which I just suddenly was watching it and just thought, oh my God, imagine writing something as good as this. And then I watched American Gods. I just thought, I wonder what the screenplay looks like for these things. I wonder what it actually looks like when you're writing something like this. And the thing that really captured my imagination that Matt was talking about was how it's a team effort, how you write the dialogue and a little bit of instructions just to keep the plot moving. And then, you know, the scenes and everything, you write the instructions about the scenes. And I just thought, oh, that sounds really interesting. So the first thing I did was went online and ordered the script for American Gods and Preacher. And just did a search for it and it came up and you can buy them for between $15 and $30 and you get signed copies sometimes, which is really nice. And I just thought I'll just take one of my ideas and try and write it as a screenplay rather than a book. And I started to do it without any software and then I talked to Teresa and she recommended some software that I totally can't remember the name of. Sorry, Teresa. But it turned out to be only for Windows machines, which is why I didn't end up investigating it any further. And then I went looking for the best screenwriting software and there was an article I found, you know, there was lots comparing the top 20 scriptwriting software and that was too much for me. So I went for an article that said the top 5 best screenwriting softwares and it happened to be on a website called scriptreaderpro.com. And ScriptReader Pro happened to be a bunch of British screenwriters who are living in LA and, you know, working globally. So I stumbled across these guys, and they obviously know what they're doing. And you can find the article at scriptreaderpro.com/screenwriting-software. And if you go there, you'll find their rundown of the top five softwares that they think are the best ones. Now, I settled on one called Celtex, which is CELTX.com. And I started to write when I was in Australia because I had quite a bit of free time when I was out there just recently. And so I put together a pilot for a television series, an 8-part television series. I worked out what all the episodes would be about. And then I just wrote the pilot. Very, very badly, I'm sure. But the thing that I really liked about the software is it produces a script that looks quite professional. Now, then I didn't know about Bibles at that point. So the Bible is where you lay out the overall plot, the mini biographies of each main character and things like that. So luckily I've got a very tolerant TV producer friend, and he said, just keep sending stuff over and we'll get back to you when you're starting to get good. So we don't have to have the embarrassing conversation where I say, what do you think? And he goes, terrible. And he's actually getting his script editor to read everything I sent him, but he didn't want to discourage me. And then I thought, who can I get to critique this properly rather than my poor mate? And I found that ScriptReader Pro do actually do a service. So from Australia, I emailed them my first script, and I paid $130, and they sent it back, giving me a very well-informed critique, I thought. It was very well-rounded. It was encouraging, yet detailed. And I could choose which of their script readers read it. So I chose someone who was into the crime fiction genre. And, yeah, I was really impressed with what I got back. So I would certainly say, if you've got a little bit of cash, and I was treating myself because I'd had done some good business out there. So if you can afford it and you want some real feedback from people who are selling scripts all day long, then I would recommend you look at their basic script reading service. And then I found that the BBC have got a phenomenal resource. If you go to BBC Writers Room, just Google it, you'll find it straight away. You can actually download the scripts from any of the drama series or comedy series, and they've got what they call writers' workshops, and you can enter competitions to be included in these writers' workshop. I think they've just done a comedy one. So every quarter, there are crime winners, there are comedy winners, and you end up going off and working with a load of other writers to hone your first scripts, which might possibly end up on the BBC, which sounds rather marvellous, doesn't it? So, yeah, check out the BBC Writers' Room, and I hope these tips get you as fired up as I was, and still am, in fact, about creating a feature film script or a television series. I hope that helps. Bye.
Thanks, Nicola. That's great. Now, as I said at the top of the show, we're talking flash fiction this week. Flash fiction is always under 1,000 words and very often less than 500. And it's a modern label for an old craft. Way back in prehistory, you find the Jataka stories from India and Aesop's fables. They could be called flash fiction.
Ooh.
The American journalist Walt Whitman, poet and storyteller, was a proponent of flash fiction in the 1800s. And in the 1900s, something called short stories were published in magazines and anthologies. And notably, Somerset Maugham published Cosmopolitan's Very Short Stories in 1936. And Hemingway published 18 pieces of what we'd now call flash fiction in his short story collection In Our Time in 1924. And of course, one of the most often quoted flash fiction pieces, For Sale, Baby Shoes, Never Worn, is attributed to him too. So this new use of simple sentences with little or no emotion were considered quite a major shift in literary style in the early 20th century. And 100 years on, we're not showing much sign of letting up. In fact, just looking through the writing magazine's competition guide for this coming month, the month of June. The Bath Flash Fiction Award closes on the 10th of June. That's a 3-yearly competition for flash fiction up to 300 words. The Segura Short Story and Poetry competitions are closing on the 15th of June. They include vignettes up to 300 words. And Writers HQ flash fiction competition closing on the 30th of June with a word limit of 500 words. And the Flash 500 competition, also on the 30th of June, looking for stories up to 500 words. So there's prizes to be won if you can dash out 500 words of short, succinct flash fiction. Any of you into that?
Well, 500 words is about my... Anyway, isn't it? It's just that's a writing session for me. And what, mentioning competitions there, I just remembered Morgan Bailey has ongoing competitions on her website. And one of the things that she said when we interviewed her, that as a judge, the first thing that catches her eye is the title. Mm. I've got a brilliant title for a flash fiction and an idea for a story, but I haven't quite worked it out.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, what I would say is read the winning, you know, go to Flash 500 and go to the sites and read the winning stories and the runners-up, because I'm massively impressed with what you can do with flash fiction.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen historical flash fiction. I've seen some very, very clever things. I've seen a whole life story in 500 words. So, yeah, it's interesting. But, yeah, I would have a go. I probably have in the past. I've entered a 300-word competition. I've entered 200-300-word competitions in the past. Didn't get anywhere, but...
Well, I tried to write some flash fiction because when I read about it, I thought, 500 words, yeah, I can dash 500 words off, or 300 words, only take me 10 minutes. But I decided in the end that it needs a lot more work, because I know now what the story is and what I want to say.
Yeah.
But now trying to convey all of that emotion and depth of feeling, and to put a twist in and lead readers on a red herring and all the rest of it, to do that in 300 or 500 words is actually not quite as simple as just dashing off 300 or 500 words.
It's a great challenge.
It is. The crafting of, once you've got your story, which took me probably not very long, probably an hour, and half of that was walking the dog, just kind of thinking through what the story could be. I'd written the story and then I went off and thought, no, this will be a better ending and so on. But now the work that I'm putting into actually refining that and crafting it, I think that's where it will happen. So we need to get cracking.
One of the pieces of advice I found in writing flash fiction was write long, then go short. Create a lump of stone from which you chip out your story sculpture.
What a lovely analogy.
Yeah. But you're going to have to wait till next week, because I had a go at...
Ooh.
So my work in progress next week is going to be what I did, because I'd read, I think, the same article that you had. So I read about it and I thought, I just set myself 20 minutes, and I sat at the table and I wrote for that 20 minutes. And yes, there's going to be lots and lots of mistakes and things, but I just thought I'd get
you to
go. But
you've got the story.
But I've got the story. Well, yeah, you'll have to wait till next week.
Okay, we'll wait and see. Okay. Yeah.
But that thing about chiselling it out, I think that's quite good. Write the story.
Yeah.
And then you can... You know, the 1,000-word story that I did for the RAC competition was more than 1,000 words and had to be cut down. And
was that the one where you had a pina colada and had to change it to a cocktail with only one word?
Yes, yes, exactly. But once I chipped away at it, I had room to go back to pina colada, which was more appropriate to the character, I thought. So I think that's good advice. Yeah. And you know, and again, it's like. Like anything, don't just think, oh, this, the standard doesn't have to be that high or whatever. The standard is extremely high.
It
look is. At the winners.
Yeah.
Look at the successful flash fiction and you'll see.
Yeah. I was interested some weeks ago now, Frank Carver posted on our Facebook group asking if anybody had ever thought of writing what he was calling novelettes and fiction that can be read in a lunch hour. And actually, I think there is probably a market with flash fiction where people are consuming literature in smaller and smaller bursts.
This
time.
Is why short fiction is popular. It's on your
commute
to work.
Yeah, it's
or
a coffee break type of thing. Yeah. Or standing at the bus stop. You can read a whole story while standing at the bus stop or what have you. So... Yeah, so I'm sure we're certainly seeing a proliferation of competitions for it, as I'm just demonstrating.
Going back to what Teresa said about she's got a good title, one of the other pieces of advice by David Gaffney was sweat your title, make it work for a living.
Yes, and I think that's kind of similar to what Morgan Bailey was saying as well.
Yes.
Don't neglect it, don't just, throw it at, just, I can't think what to call it, we'll call it... yeah, well, John's story.
Yeah,
or
she said actually sometimes the title will come to you from the story, and that's what I've found with the piece of flash fiction I'm working on at the moment. It started off with a title, and I had a cracking opening line. I was so pleased with my opening line, and my opening line was related to the title. But as I wrote it, I suddenly realised that there was a much more, you know, a much bigger hook in a different title. So that, that kind of came out for me from something that happens within the story. So,
The article started with what I thought was quite a nice quote from Elmore Leonard. Apparently he said, "If it sounds like writing, rewrite it."
Yes, yes. He's like, no adjectives and no...
Only ever say said. Yes. Can't answer, question.
Anything.
It works for him. His, you know, his, he's a very successful writer with a very direct style, no description, you know. But I do think if you're self-consciously... This is something I've learned, trying to
write well.
You probably go back to it and think, God, that, you know, that personally, I have gone back and thought, oh, that reads really badly. That is naff. And I think it's actually put me off writing for a lot of years. I think I was trying too hard to be writerly. And everything I wrote, I'd read it and think, oh, that's absolutely dreadful.
Instead of recrafting it.
Yeah, yeah. I just thought, oh, I'm rubbish.
Well, I think if you, I mean, it's not about sitting down and just writing, is it? It's you write your first draft, then you put it to one side, and then you come back and you do craft it. And I think with flash fiction, that crafting element is probably, it's like with poetry. I mean, the shorter the form, the more every single word has to earn its place on the page.
And actually, that's probably a good discipline that actually then informs longer style work.
Yes, absolutely.
Longer form.
Absolutely.
Work.
And a lot of people say, you know, the editing process is actually more creative than the initial drafting, the initial writing process, because then you're really analysing every single piece and looking at the shape on the page and, you know, how many white blank spaces there are and so on. So.
Which is why you need a little bit of time sometimes between writing and redrafting, because you get that distance and you can see that the things you thought were clever aren't clever.
Yeah, they're purple.
Yeah,
definitely. Well, let's go over now and hear that interview with Gail Aldwin.
After living in various places around the world, Gail Aldwin settled in Dorset in England in 2006. And since then, she's reinvented herself as a poet, playwright, comedy writer, a visiting tutor to creative writing undergraduates, chair of the Dorset Writers Network, and writer of award-nominated short fiction collection Paisley Shirt. And in just 8 days, Gail's first full-length novel, The String Games, will be published by Victorina Press. Welcome, Gail, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us. It must be a very busy time in your life.
It is. It's actually been really frantic, but I'm not complaining because it's absolutely a delight to see stories coming to print.
Brilliant. So, Gail, why did you focus on short work to start with?
Well, I've always written long fiction, a long side short fiction. So the flash fiction ticks lots of boxes in terms of being able to complete a story. When you're, I've got an analogy between writing a novel and an endurance run, like a half marathon. I did the Weymouth half marathon a couple of weeks ago. And it seems to me that there are similarities. So when you're undertaking training for a half marathon, you do cross training. So you might be doing swimming or walking or dancing or whatever, which exercises different muscles and builds stamina. And rather like the endurance of writing a novel, you need to do creative cross training as well. So writing poetry or short fiction alongside a novel gives you that creative cross training that you need to sustain yourself to complete a long piece of fiction, but at the same time you're developing short pieces of fiction and poetry that build other skills and help in this journey to become a published writer.
So would you say flash fiction is a good place for an aspiring writer to start, or perhaps for a jaded writer to find new ideas and inspiration?
Absolutely. It's an opportunity. A flash fiction provides lots of opportunities to get published. There are lots of journals online and print anthologies that you can submit to and see your work reaching an audience, which I think is really important. I mean, it's nice to write for your own pleasure and enjoyment, but it's about getting those messages out there because we all write to share something and it's important to reach that audience. So I think it does both those things. If you're starting out, it builds your skills and confidence to carry on writing. And if you're needing a bit of a shot in the arm, having a short story published is just what you need to carry on.
Gail, I find flash fiction very intimidating. How do you pack all of that in? And was it difficult for you in the beginning?
Well, it is like moulding a piece of clay, really. You've got to get your hands messy to start off with. I mean, the lump of clay is difficult to mould and make. And it's also difficult to get your hands on it in the first place. So I understand the challenges. But you have to kind of write long and then pare back so that you're picking out the best from a longer draft. People sort of compare flash fiction to longer fiction by saying, you know, long fiction is like your long black coffee and flash fiction is your espresso. So it's about making it intense and sort of working on that for the intensity. So it's picking out the best bits, honing it so that every word counts.
So do you approach it as you would a longer piece?
Because I write in so many different ways. When I get an idea now, I think about the idea and think about what kind of writing would suit this idea best. So if it's a moment or an instance in time, it might be poetry. If it's got a story arc, then I think how long is that story arc? How much can you write in it? And if it feels short, then it would be flash fiction. If it's longer, then I might take it into a longer short story.
And some people really enjoy a formula or a format to write to. So do you use any sort of tool for short work? I mean, do you use a three-act structure or beginning, middle, end?
I've just come across this brilliant model that's really helped me with my flash fiction. And it's thinking about the said, the unsaid, and the unsayable. Because flash fiction is often about what's going on underneath the story. So you're hinting at, a relationship between a couple. And I think if you can focus on those three elements, what they're actually saying, what's in their head that they're not saying, and what is actually unsayable, because the unsayable is really so much about all kinds of fiction, because the whole thing about plot is where your character wants to get to and what's stopping them. And sometimes that's kind of the unsayable. And often it's around love and fear and all those kinds of elements that bring a story together.
That's a really good formula to work to. We'll remember that one. So how would you say flash and short fiction varies from novellas and novels in terms of topics, themes, structure, plot, and all that sort of thing? Would you say, you know, with flash fiction, you would stick to just a scene or something like that?
I think my flash fiction does. I tend to think about, I mean, for example, I just wrote a flash fiction yesterday, and I was trying to think about how to, it's kind of a clashing of ideas in a way. So what I wanted to do was use a thunderstorm to express a relationship between a man and a woman. And the thunderstorm actually illuminates this woman's future, how she can move forward. So it's a catalyst for her in actually leaving her husband. So there's a longer story running underneath the narrative, but the actual flash fiction is only a 10-minute conversation.
Thank you.
Do you think that entering contests with flash fiction might be a good way to judge whether or not your story is good?
I think competitions, there are lots of advantages in entering competitions. Often it's about just having a deadline to work towards.
Yeah.
So it does focus the mind in order to get to that submission deadline and get your story in. So you have to obviously have it as honed as it can be. I think that competitions are definitely worth entering. But as I said earlier, I think there are so many opportunities to submit your story for publication online that you kind of get into a flash fiction community. If you're on social media, there are lots of people who write flash fiction, and you can feel part of that community, which is always very welcome, because otherwise, as we all know, we're sitting at our desks working on our own. And there's a hashtag, and I think it's hashtag VSS, so it's very short story. And people post their short stories on Twitter, and you can just enter into that community and enjoy other people's stories and share your own. So there's lots of opportunities to get that collaborative support with Flash Fiction. I think competitor entries are one way, but sort of really engaging with the Flash Fiction community online is another way of feeling your way through and gauging how effective your stories are.
And do the members of that community give feedback to each other?
In terms of replying, yes, certainly. If I really love a piece of flash fiction that I've read online, I would certainly reply and say, yeah, I really loved that. The other place that I post stuff is on a website called Paragraph Planet. You have to submit a story in 75 words. And the Richard Hearn runs it. He's been running it for about 8 years now. And there's a very good opportunity to get your story posted. He says out of about 8 submissions, he'll probably publish about 5. And it's a step on the ladder. And if you've been published by Paragraph Planet, you can go on his kind of list of authors that have their work published there. And also you start looking out for people. You know, it's a website that you might touch base with once or twice a week to see who else has been published and what they've published. And then again, it's about just kind of making contact with people through social media to say you like their stuff and, you know, you can begin following them. And then you feel like you're part of that world.
That's brilliant. So that's Paragraph Planet.
Yes.
Okay. So you say you've always written full length work, but you've published your poetry, you've published your collection of short stories, and now Victriana are about to publish The String Games, which is a full length novel.
That's right. Yes, I'm absolutely delighted. That's coming out. It's being released on the 28th of May, so it's available from then
on Amazon and in all good bookshops.
Yes, it's going to be available on Amazon from that point, and you know, it's got an IBS number, so you can buy it through any good bookshop. Yep. You can buy it from the Victorina website as well, so you can just log into the website and get it from their online shop.
Okay, well, we'll put that link up as well. So do you want to tell us a bit about The String Games, what it's about, where the inspiration came from?
The String Games, well, the catalyst for The String Games is the abduction and murder of a small boy told from the older sister's perspective. So it's a three-part novel. So the protagonist of the story is captured at 3 points in her life. So at 10 years old, when the abduction takes place, again at 15, where she's a vulnerable young adult because of this experience. And then at 23, when she's able to address issues of unresolved grief and move forward with her life. So although it's a sort of grisly story in terms of it featuring an abduction and murder of a small child, it's actually a positive outcome because it's giving the message that whatever the problems that you have in your life, it's possible to overcome them and move forward.
We'll look forward to that.
I will, yeah.
Sounds like right up my street. Excellent. Well, best of luck with that, Gail. And thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. As I say, it must be a very busy time for you at the moment. But we do appreciate it very much, so thank you.
Yes, it's been very informative. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Mm. What a clever lady.
Yeah, indeed. Now, if any of you have any flash fiction under 500 words to share, we'd love to read it. You can post it on our Facebook group. There's a challenge for you.
Or maybe I'll stick one up there just to get the ball
rolling. Maybe you should. Well, it's almost time to say goodbye once again. Next week, we're going to be discussing themes in storytelling, so we hope you'll join us again then. But before we go, I'm going to ask Teresa. Teresa, what's on your bedside table?
Well, I'm reading Save Me the Waltz by Zelda Fitzgerald. Now, I read about Zelda last year when researching writers and mental health, and I was quite shocked to discover that Scott F. Fitzgerald plundered her diaries and letters for his fictional material, and he was quite angry about her writing this book because he wanted to use the same material, her diaries and novels. And that was quite interested in that sort of parasitic relationship. And then we met Kate McDonald a couple of months ago from Handheld Press, and she said she was reissuing this as a handheld classic. So that led me to this book. It is autobiographical. It's about a young woman in a southern town. It starts sort of at the tail end of the First World War, and there are soldiers garrisoned in the town, and eventually she marries one of them. So the main character is called Alabama, and the guy she marries is called David. But a lot, and he's an artist, not a writer, but a lot of it is based on their real life. And you get this sense of a very a lifestyle of glamorous ennui, shall we say. It's quite a decadent, extravagant, careless lifestyle, but people are generally, or all the main protagonists are rather bored and dissatisfied with themselves. The writing style, modern readers will find quite florid. You know, we're always being told don't describe things, don't use adjectives, and she uses a lot of description. You could open it at any page and pick a descriptive passage. I'll read you something in a moment. Lots of descriptions of flowers and the perfume of these flowers, and it's quite a sensual experience. So here's a little passage. As I say, you could open it at any page. Pomegranates in the leathery lacing of their foliage ripened outside the lattice to an exotic decor. The bronze balls of a mournful crepe myrtle at the end of the lot split into lavender tarlatan gurgles. Japanese plums splashed heavy sacks of summer on the roof of the chicken yard.
Wow.
And as I say, some readers might not like that. It could be a bit cloying, but when it gets to the bit where they go to New York, and it's just a brilliant description of Jazz Age New York in little flashes of insight. And very good. You know, I'm enjoying it.
Good. Thank you. And now we're going to hear from Matt Owen. Matt, what's on your bedside table?
My current book is a book called Fire in Babylon by Simon Lister, and it charts the rise of the West Indian cricket team from the mid-70s until the early 90s. And it's not just a book about cricket, actually. It's a book about West Indian culture and how the islands were brought together by this wonderful game of cricket. It's also, I've seen that there is also a fantastic documentary as well, the same title. So it's not just, it's one of those brilliant documentaries that's not just about cricket, it's about West Indian culture. So yes, and I thoroughly recommend it.
Right, well, that's all for this week, Right Clubbers. Don't forget to share this podcast with a writerly friend. You are part of a community of people from six continents around the world, and we'd love you to talk to us on our Facebook group. Tell us what you'd like to talk about, or even make a contribution yourself. We're always interested to speak with fellow writers, so please do get in touch. Until next week, then, goodbye.
Bye.